homeless.
Thank you so much.
In Salt Lake City, today until 12 o'clock, KSL looks at the ways downtown is being affected, the drugs and dangers, and what can be done to finally make a change. Live from Pioneer Park, here's Doug Wright on KSL News Radio 102.7 FM and 1160 AM.
So good to have you with us on this very special broadcast, and we are coming to you live from Pioneer Park. And just to paint the picture where we are, we're on the south end of the park in about mid-block on 4th South.
And as...
Whoops, I think we've got something there bleeding through on the headset. As I look immediately to the west of where I am sitting right now, if I were to go just a little over a block west, that's where the old part of my family, the last name is Love, and that's where the old Love family home was, a little grocery store and an adobe brickyard in the back. And I think of the history and the significance of this part of our community. This is one of the most historic sites in the entire Intermountain West, the site that we are looking out at, which is Pioneer Park. It's also been described by leadership in Salt Lake City as the largest open space, green space that we have in downtown Salt Lake City, where people can recreate, people can come and engage in sports and picnics and farmers markets and things like that. So this is a most significant area of our community. And today, as we talk with many people who are involved in this community, in this area around the park, whether it be they live here, whether it be that they're taking advantage of some of the opportunities and some of the efforts to reach out, especially to the homeless community. I've been told that the proper term for those who find themselves homeless rather than those who are homeless. Well, we are going to talk about that and the businesses that are trying to make a living, trying to stimulate Utah's economy in this neighborhood. I'm very pleased off the bat to introduce you to Brandon Kitchen. And this is an individual who has experienced homelessness. And Brandon, I welcome you to the program. It's good to have you here.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here.
You and I met just a couple of moments ago, but I've read just a little bit about you. Maybe you can tell us briefly your story. How did you end up being listed among the homeless?
Well, I was in prison for a little while, and I came up here to be with a family member. That relationship fell through at the last minute, and I ended up out on the street.
Yeah, when you were in prison, was that for a violent crime?
Yes, it was.
How did that change the dynamics when you came out and back into society?
Well, I went in at a pretty young age, and when I came out, everything had changed.
Yeah, I was going to say, you don't appear to be very young for me, and I was looking at the number of years that you spent in prison, so you had to be very young.
I was 18 years old when I was incarcerated, yes.
Right. Coming out with not only a prison record, but something that indicated violence, what were the challenges?
Oh, the challenges were innumerable. ID was one of the main things that I had problems with, reacclimating myself to society, and this was a foreign city to me, too. I didn't know anybody here, and I didn't know my way around. That was one of the main things, too.
So. Were you raised here, though?
No, I wasn't. I'm from the East Coast.
From the East Coast. Yes. I see. When you actually did, was there that epiphanal moment where you all of a sudden went, okay, I'm pretty much in a tight spot here. I'm homeless. I don't know what to do.
It happened all at once. I was escorted from the halfway house right out the door. Not a dime in my pocket, nowhere to go. I didn't know anybody here, so it happened all at once. It was very epiphanal.
What did you end up doing? Where did you end up going?
My brain was kind of in panic mode. I really didn't know what to do. For a little while, I wandered around, and luckily I came across a woman at the library who directed me towards the road home, which is the shelter here.
Uh-huh. What was that experience like to go to the road home?
It wasn't very good. Again, fresh out of prison, I was trying to change my life, but this almost put me back in a prison mentality mindset. It wasn't very pleasant.
How long ago was this?
April. This was April, so just a couple of months.
So this, I was not aware that it was this recent. That is very, very recent. What were the conditions like, since this has been a recent experience then for you? There has been some conversation, not only about Road Home, but elsewhere, some of the conditions of the facility designed to help folks like you.
The conditions didn't seem like they were set up to help anybody like me. It is a roof over your head, and for that I was grateful. But drug use was rampant. There was violence on the inside. There was a real problem with getting in, even if you worked, because I got a job shortly afterward and would still have to stand in the rain and the snow for several hours.
Right.
So it wasn't very conducive to a somebody who's trying to get their life on track type program.
What kind of work were you able to get?
A commercial nursery out in Copperton.
Interesting.
So, trees and plants and potting soil. It's a lot
of fun. Enjoy that?
I enjoy it immensely. I love it.
Was there ever a conflict that, okay, if I now have a job or I've moved on a little bit, that I'm cut off from the other help? Were you still welcome at the shelter?
We were still welcome, but we would get off at 6, and we would have to stand in line till 10 or 11, and we were actually told at one point that the consequence of having a job is you lose your bed, and that was completely counterintuitive to what we thought they would be trying to do.
So when you'd come home after a long day at work, there may or may not be a bed for you?
No, may or may not be a bed at first, and then we were at the very least guaranteed a spot on the floor, but we would still wait sometimes until 11 and a couple times even till 12 at night to get in.
So. When you realized that perhaps there were some options and that there were some things out there, and you started to realize you could get back to work and you could have a job, what are the hopes now? I understand you're working closely with the Pioneer Park Coalition right now. Is that an opportunity that is going to afford other openings for you?
As far as other openings, I'm not sure about that. I was personally more concerned about giving back in the manner in which I was helped, and I saw the conditions down there, and it's not good. But the same way I was helped, I know other people can be helped, and I thought the Pioneer Park Coalition was the best avenue through which that could be effectuated.
Where do you stand right now? What's the status of your life today?
I'm happy. It's still a struggle, but I'm moving forward, and I'm just trying to get everything on track.
Where do you stay?
I live at the old Rio Grande Hotel, but this week I'm getting a new apartment. So.
Really?
Yes, I am.
Oh, that's great.
Yes,
that's great. Is it something that you've come up with on your own, or is it something that kind of is part of the process of moving you to another place?
Both, a little of both. I would look around, and I would get recommendations and a little help and nudges in the right direction. What parts of town aren't the best parts of town, and where's more expensive. So
what's been the absolute hardest thing for you since you got out of prison? What was the toughest thing?
Probably the homelessness, I think. I mean, I know that's what you're saying, but probably the conditions at the shelter, I think, because there's just a lot of despair there, a lot of hopelessness, and you can feel it. It's nearly overwhelming, and you can feel it just grab at you. And I revolted against it, and I fought my best so that I wouldn't be overcome by that, because I wanted out of there.
That almost sounded like kind of a Dante's Inferno thing, where you pass through the door and you look up and you see the sign, you know, basically enter here, abandon all hope.
Abandon all hope, ye who enter here. That's what it feels like there.
What would you change?
There's actually a lot I would change. I would, I don't know. There's a lot I would change. The cleanliness is one thing. There's a bad element down there who are only interested in exploiting some of the mental health aspects, or the people who are caught up in drug substance
right.
abuse, that sort of thing.
Were you ever tempted to go that direction?
No, that was never really my thing. And
yeah.
Personally, I guess I'm lucky in that respect, because that's one of the main problems down there. Very rampant.
Brandon, it's a privilege to chat with you. Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay.
I really appreciate you joining us today here at KSL News Radio. Brandon Kitchen with us. We have so much more on the program for you. Coming up next, we're going to talk with someone who has actually tried to forge a business in this area and has done so for some time and quite successfully, but it's not been without its challenges. We'll talk with the owner of the Rio Grande Cafe, and that's coming up in just a moment here on the Doug Wright Show at KSL News Radio. Just one of the reasons Joshua Stern sells so many more homes than any other agent out there, it's because of their marketing system. It's on a whole different level. The average agent sells, 11 homes a year? In the Salt Lake area, Joshua and his team sold 226 homes last year. and you will love the service you get. You'll sit down and you'll talk about your home, agree on a price and a time frame in which it should sell. And if it hasn't sold in that time and price range, well, Joshua Stern will buy it. And he also knows that he has to make you happy each and every day. So you can cancel your listing at any time. But just like Ron, who tried to sell his Bountiful home with three different agents, he finally went to Joshua Stern. The Stern team's grand opening created multiple offers. They sold Ron's home in less than a week above the list price at $375,000. Ron was happy, to say the least, and you will be too. Contact Joshua Stern at 444-9100. Or go to sternsellshomes.com. If I were selling my home, I'd be contacting Joshua Stern at 444-9100.
Recent reports show an alarming increase in the number of men who are suffering from ED or PE. ED is a condition that no man should have to accept. Dr. Michael Trumbly has been treating men with ED and PE successfully for more than 20 years. At Physicians ED Center, a great love life is just one office visit away. No matter what your age or medical history, if you have a prostate problem or diabetes, if Viagra and Cialis have let you down, the doctors at Physicians ED Center can help virtually any man with a custom blend of safe prescription medications. There's no surgery, and best of all, it's guaranteed to work on your first visit, or it's free. Don't wait another minute. Call Physicians ED Center today, 801-900-5452. That's 801-900-5452. 801-900-5452.
With the three things you need to know this hour, I'm Mark Jackson. First, three people are dead following a crash in a construction zone on I-15 at Point of the Mountain overnight. Police say speed may have been a factor. Second, West Valley Police continue to investigate whether two reports of overnight shootings are connected. The shootings happened within blocks of each other near 3400 West and Parkway Boulevard. The men fled in a red vehicle. And third is ABC News.
ABC News, I'm Daria Albinger. The first Republican presidential debate of the 2016 campaign is tomorrow, and the polls say this is the guy to beat.
Republican hopefuls seem to enjoy themselves at Monday's GOP forum in New Hampshire, but maybe that's because this guy wasn't there.
I took a lot of heat the first week, and now everybody's saying I was right, and they're apologizing to me.
Donald Trump will literally be center stage at the first GOP debate in Ohio as the front runner in the polls. So could this become a political brawl?
You know, certainly I don't want to attack. If I'm attacked, I have to, you know, do something back, but I'd like it to be very civil.
Jeb Bush and Scott Walker will be standing right next to him in second and third positions. Brad Milkey, ABC News.
More tearful testimony from relatives of the victims in the Colorado movie theater trial. At times, it's made the jurors themselves cry. They're going to have to decide if shooter James Holmes gets the death penalty.
Your weather for today, we'll have some clouds, maybe a little bit of sunshine, 20% chance of showers along the way, high 91. Right now, 81 degrees in downtown Salt Lake City. Now back to the Doug Wright Show on KSL News Radio.
Live from downtown Pioneer Park, it's Homeless in Salt Lake City. A special broadcast of The Doug Wright Show on KSL News Radio.
Boy, we are right here at the epicenter. We are in the park on the southern end. As we look to the north, you see just what an amazing spot this is in the heart of downtown Salt Lake City, how historic it is, the architecturally just rich all around us, and some amazing businesses that have been here too. And some, you know, there's that old song, I was country before country was cool. Well, I'll tell you, this guy was here before it was cool, and you have seen it all. Let me introduce you to the owner of the Rio Grande Cafe. I've been a fan of his cafe, his great food, for so many years, even going back to when you're up in Park City. Pete Henderson is here with me. Pete, why in the world, years ago, as I mentioned, when long before some of the others were here, did you invest in the Pioneer Park Depot District?
Well, at the time, the area was in the midst of a redevelopment. They called it the Gateway Redevelopment Zone, and I was invited here by the state to look at that space, and I actually was attracted by the fact that it was a bit on the wild side. It was on the west side of the tracks, and for most Salt Lake people at that time, that was a walk on the wild side. We actually were able to actually use that as part of our identity, that we're come on over to our side of the tracks. Yeah. There's something good right. happening over there.
Right. And, you know, it is exciting because, as I mentioned, the architecture down here, not just the depots, but that historic depot that you are in. And then, you know, of course, KSL is much closer to the Union Pacific Depot. There are just so many things in this part of town. Was it difficult to lure some of your old customers and to cultivate new customers to come down here?
Well, sure. It took a number of years to grow our business. And yet it did continue slowly, but continually grew until approximately, let's just say until 5 or 6 years ago.
Yeah.
And I know there are a number of reasons why perhaps I don't have as many customers walking in my front door as I once did, but I'm absolutely certain that one of the reasons is the neighborhood is, in my opinion, out of control.
You know, it really has changed all of us. I've mentioned to my listeners every working day when I've been here in Salt Lake City, not elsewhere, I have driven by Pioneer Park. I function in this area every working day of my life. We're a little bit on the northern extreme, as I mentioned, up by the mm-hmm. Union Pacific Depot, but all of us have noticed it. It is palpable. And you look at, we were just rehearsing some of the businesses that have just closed recently, and I look at Iggy's down here, I look at Applebee's can't survive here, I look at Zitejas that has closed, I look at, you know, La Jolla Groves and Biagi's, and the list just goes on and on and on. And as we look into the business areas surrounding Pioneer Park, it is startling. What has happened, in your opinion, Pete? What has changed?
Well, in my opinion, it has largely to do with very poor public policy. The city government has chosen to be very, very tolerant in regards to criminal activity down here. And in fact, the social services, in my opinion, are not well managed. So, in fact, they invite needy and homeless people into the neighborhood for services. And at this point, there's somewhere between 1,000 and 1,200 is estimated the number of people down here. Well, they invite them down here, and then they give them either little or no service. They give them a place to sleep at night, and yet lock them out during the day. They don't provide proper bathroom facilities. And so that's what frustrates me is I've been in touch with the city government all these years. I met with Ralph Becker within a few months of him taking office 7 years ago, and I told him exactly what the issues were, and he's made some efforts, but in fact things are worse than they were when he took office. So there's a basic tolerance here in the city. Chief Burbank also had kind of a we don't want to create a police state attitude. Mm-hmm. I've also heard them say a million times we can't arrest ourselves out of this problem, and even though I know that's true, it certainly would help, in my opinion. I'm told by the police officers that work my beat that there are individuals down here that have 6, 8, 10 felonies on their record.
Wow.
And yet there's no room for them at Sheriff Winder's jail. So there's really some terrible public policy going on, and I'd like to see some improvement.
What spills into your parking lot and into your front doors? We don't want to just sit around and, you know, have a horror fest here, but I understand you've dealt with some pretty tough stuff.
Well, I'd be happy to share a couple stories, but I could keep you here day and night telling you horror yeah. stories. But some of the more recent ones, it wasn't more than about 2 or 3 weeks ago, we had a heroin overdose in our bathrooms. We have every day hundreds of people that defy our no parking signs and park in the north parking lot that is designated for restaurant customers as well as state employees. And that is, in fact, since the city decided to eliminate, or the police department eliminated street parking, because that's where a lot of the illegal activity was occurring. Well, there's no parking on the street now, so the people that are down here buying and using drugs, heroin specifically, are doing that in my parking lot since they can't do it on the street any longer. So there's another experience that we've had that is very frustrating, and I'm not sure what the solution is. Of course, we ask for a lot of police protection, and it is not uncommon for police activity on Rio Grande Street to literally close us down. If, in fact, you pull three or four fire engines and a dozen police cars into that particular area, in more than one occasion, I've had situations where the customers that I had inside the building couldn't leave, yeah, and the ones outside the building could not come in.
That happened to a friend of mine and I. We were over there just a little while ago, you know, having lunch at your cafe, and boy, all of a sudden the fire trucks come along. Now, we were able to get out of the restaurant and go the other way, but we couldn't go north, and I can only imagine the frustrations. And Pete, in the final moment that we have, because we can tell the story and we can, you know, list the problems, I appreciate the fact that you've been proactive. I appreciate the fact you've met with the mayor. I appreciate the fact that you do have some ideas. You do attend the meetings. If you could do one thing that you think would make this neighborhood, which it truly is, this neighborhood better, what would it be?
Well, I'm a one-trick pony in that regard. Move the shelter. The shelter has not worked well since its inception years ago, and it would operate much better in a slightly more removed location outside the central business district. It's my opinion that wherever a large volume of homeless people are, there's going to be, because of the mental illness and the drug addiction, there's going to be antisocial behavior. And because of that, I think that there should be a certain amount of distance between these facilities and those of us that are trying to attract customers into our neighborhood.
Do you think part of the problem is the concentration of services that are here? It's not like there's one shelter. I mean, we've got a lot of different things going on.
That you're absolutely right. You know, even when I got here 35 years ago, there was a Salvation Army on 2nd South and Rio Grande Street, but it only had, I'd guess, 40 or 50 or 60 gentlemen there. Mm-hmm. And I mean gentlemen because, again, it was a different demographic.
Yeah,
these were the old hobos back in those days.
Yeah. Well, we've noticed a change, and even a change in the panhandling, where it used to be, hey, could you spare a dollar? Hey, could you help me out? And now it is getting aggressive. It's getting nasty. You mentioned the mental illness. I'll be walking into a movie, and I call them the ravers. You know, just people raving on the corner, and it does not create an environment that is comfortable for patrons, and I'm sure it does not is not conducive to a great business environment for you. Pete, I really appreciate you joining us here at KSL.
Thank you for the invitation.
I've appreciated the great restaurant over the years, too. Great
Thanks
food.
Thanks again.
Thank you. All right, we are going to take a brief break, and I appreciate, again, Pete Henderson joining us with the Rio Grande Cafe. And we'll be chatting more from Pioneer Park. So stay right here. Coming up next, we're going to talk with the Division Director of Homeless Services for the Volunteers of America. So stay with us as our broadcast continues.
President Boyd K. Packer spent more than 50 years as a general authority and influenced countless lives. In his last published work, President Packer shares his final testimony in the new book, Truths Most Worth Knowing. In his signature bold style, he gives an ultimate witness addressing the issues that he felt are essential to our faith and well-being. Truths Most Worth Knowing, an Apostle's Witness, available now at Deseret Book and DeseretBook.com.
Study the Book of Mormon like never before. The latest volumes released in the Joseph Smith Papers Project feature facsimile copies of the printer's manuscript of the Book of Mormon, the oldest complete version of the Book of Mormon in existence today. Get unprecedented access to this priceless document with a detailed transcript and a complete, never-before-published set of full-color photographs of the manuscript. Get the latest Joseph Smith Papers Project volumes at Deseret Book today or at DeseretBook.com.
We have our Mark Jackson, who is standing by in the KSL 24-Hour News Center with our lead story.
Well, this hour we've learned more from the Utah Highway Patrol about a deadly crash near Lehigh on I-15. KSL News Radio's Peter Seymour is live at the UHP's office in Murray with an update. Peter.
Well, Mark, three people died in two cars when a Honda Accord slammed into a Toyota minivan that slammed into a Ford van. UHP Sergeant Todd Roy says the Accord's driver, Dale Orton of Sandy, was going too fast and perhaps didn't see traffic stopped in front of him in a darkened construction zone last night. A mother and son from Layton died in the minivan. Deanne Colbury was 53. Keegan Colbury was 16. Keegan may have worn a seatbelt or not, but Orton certainly did not, according to Sergeant Todd Royce. Troopers don't know why Orton was speeding to begin with. They're going to look and see. Hopefully they can determine if he was distracted or if he had some sort of medical condition. They're just unsure at this point. Live in Murray, Peter Seymour, KSL News Radio.
A bountiful woman has made dramatic progress since being hit by a car and left for dead a month ago. Family members say Nina Jacobs has been told by doctors she may walk again in 3 months.
Nobody should ever go through that in their lifetime, and it's going to be a long road, but she's determined.
Christy Banks is a cousin. Police still have no real leads in the case. If you have information, call them. Meanwhile, Jacob's family set up a GoFundMe page. There is information on our website, KSL.com. KSL's top national story this hour from ABC News. The governor of Mississippi now urging soldiers statewide to defend themselves as necessary after gunfire was reported for a second consecutive day near Camp Shelby. Soldiers training there reported the shots fired this morning. Governor Phil Bryant says all available personnel will be used to find and arrest the suspect. Your money at this moment, the Dow still in positive territory, or actually it's just gone down to off one at 17,549. NASDAQ saw 39 at 5145. S&P down or up 8 at 2100. Coming up on KSL News Radio, we'll check your weather forecast, which looks to be a mixed bag today. KSL News Times 1032.
Brian Martin here with Utah's Morning News. Check out all the places you can find breaking KSL News. KSL.com, on the KSL app, and of course, in your car at KSL News Radio.
Every time I meet with my friend Jim Gillen, whether it's at lunch or visiting him up in the office in Layton, he always reminds me that when people put off, you know, you're afraid to deal with it. You don't know where to go. You don't know what to do when you get those nasty letters from the IRS and you're being threatened. The worst thing, Jim reminds me of this all the time, is to put it off and do nothing. Contact the IRS law pros at the Gillen Law Firm. Because after all, the IRS can swoop in and empty bank accounts, take IRAs and 401ks, even Social Security income. You know, the IRS can even contact everyone on your accounts receivables list. Call the Gillen Law Firm now, the IRS Law Pros, and put them to work for you. They offer free consultation. They can help you get through this situation that you're dealing with the IRS. 444-9302 is their number, or you just go to irslawpros.com.
This is Derek Overstreet, president of the New Millennium Group. You know, Social Security is a lot different than ever, and the number of retired people will double in the next 30 years. And that raises a lot of questions, and that's why you should schedule an appointment with me today. My number is 801-446-9950. You know, what you don't know could cost you thousands. Our team will help you figure out when to file, how to file, and what to expect. Did you know that if you wait until you're 70 to start drawing Social Security, you'll collect 76% more per month than if you started at age 62? Join us this month for our free education workshop on maximizing your Social Security retirement benefits, and let us help you take advantage of the benefits you've earned. All attendees will receive my free personalized Social Security report. Register today by calling 801-446-9950. That's 801-446-9950. Or visit us online at nmutah.com.
How's business? What do you say we make it amazing? It's easy with the amazing rewards for business Visa credit card from Zions Bank. With the amazing Business Rewards Card, anything you buy for your business can be your reward. Why limit your options to overpriced third-party catalogs filled with items you don't want? Instead, our amazing Rewards Points program empowers you to invest your rewards your way. Goodbye blackout dates, restrictions, and overpriced pre-selected reward items. So, let's make your amazing business even more amazing with the Amazing Rewards for Business credit card from Zions Bank. Apply today and earn 25,000 points when you spend $2,500 within the first 90 days. Credit card subject to credit approval. Certain terms, conditions, and restrictions apply. Offer available for new credit cards only. Offer subject to change at any time. May not be available with all card types. Zions Bank, member FDIC. Is your card amazing?
Traffic and weather together brought to you by the Toyota Camry. Here's Eric Butler in the KSL Traffic Center.
Northbound I-15 looking good from Provo all the way to Point of the Mountain this morning, even all the way through that lane split area up to Bangor Highway. But we do have one accident right at the Highland Alpine exit. That's after you've exited the highway and you're heading eastbound on Timpanogos Highway. Those cars are pulled over to the right, not causing any major problems. As far as city streets are concerned, 3500 South is a little bit busy, especially when it's at 33. That's between State Street and the freeway in South Salt Lake. Beyond Glaze, perfect for any occasion. Give something that's as good to give as it is to receive. Beyond Glaze donuts can be customizable and perfect for any event. Beyond Glaze with 5 locations. I'm Eric Butler in the KSL Traffic Center.
Weather along the Wasatch Front looks to be a mixed bag today. Some sun, some clouds, possibly a few showers. We're going to be up to 91 and muggy later, 69 for the low. Then it cools a bit and more sunshine for Thursday, 87 for the high, 63 for the low. Then Friday's our best chance of rain, high of 80 degrees. Right now, 82 degrees in downtown Salt Lake City, mostly cloudy at 10:37. You get the top stories every 30 minutes. Breaking news the second it happens. I'm Mark Jackson, KSL News Radio 102.7 FM and 1160 AM, Utah's news, traffic, and weather station.
Homeless.
Thank you so much.
In Salt Lake City. Today until 12 o'clock, KSL looks at the ways downtown is being affected, the drugs and dangers, and what can be done to finally make a change. Live from Pioneer Park, here's Doug Wright on KSL News Radio 102.7 FM and 1160 AM.
This program, I sincerely hope, will help us set the stage, help us recognize the challenges, recognize the opportunities, set the stage for what we hope can be a rejuvenization, a revitalization of this most significant part of downtown Salt Lake City, bearing in mind that there are fellow Utahns, fellow citizens, many of them from out of state, fellow human beings that need our help in this area as well. And I so appreciate those who are participating in the program today to help us hopefully do exactly that. And Elizabeth Bueller joins us right now, Homeless Services Coordinator for Salt Lake City. Elizabeth, it's good to have you here. As you sit here and look over this great neighborhood, this most historic area, the mayor himself has said this is the largest green space, open space that we have in all of downtown Salt Lake City. What do you see when you are here? What do you want to accomplish here?
You see, I see a lot of potential for this neighborhood. You can see they're setting up for the Twilight Concert Series right now, which is a great event. It brings people from all over the county and surrounding areas down to this neighborhood so they can experience this neighborhood. We see to our left, we see new apartments going up by Garbett Home. So we see a lot of potential. But part of that potential is we can't leave some of our community members behind, and those are those experiencing homelessness.
In the meantime, we have others that are fleeing this area, businesses that are closing right and left. It is shocking to see the number of vacant spaces in Gateway, and it seems to be spreading. I look at Iggy's now, which is vacant. I was talking to Pete from the Rio Grande Cafe, and the number of people that, you know, see this great hotel facility over here check in, and within a day they're checking out in a big darn hurry. What do we do?
So right now the city is really doing two things. One, we're creating our long-term vision for where facilities and how those facilities should look in these emergency services, shelter, meal programs, day services. But we're also trying to have immediate solutions that we can help those, the businesses, the residents, really hang on while we develop these long-term solutions.
I was mentioning to you off the air, I've had emails, different things of that nature, people saying, good grief, if you choose to live in this area, or if you are homeless and have a child in this area, what those children could very well be subjected to in the course of any given week, but especially those who have invested and bought a loft apartment or something. They're over on Pierpont, they're over above Gateway, they're in some of the places that eventually will be built. They say what our children see in the course of a week is something no kid should see in their lifetime.
Well, let's talk about the children that are living at the road home. Right now, the Midvale Overflow Shelter for Families is currently under construction. When it opens in November, it'll be a brand new facility, which is great. Unfortunately, in Midvale, Mayor Seguin is wonderful. It can only be open 6 months of the year. But in the interim, while we're looking at what to do with families, which I should say is the City Commission, which is about halfway through its process, chaired by Mrs. Gail Miller and Mayor Palmer DePaulis, they're looking at separating family shelter. That seems to be right across the board, from providers to clients to businesses and community members. But while we're doing that, we're also trying to do immediate fixes, and this is not long term, but right now the city, with the Sorensen Unity Center, we're installing a mural outside the playground. And while you think, oh, that's a great art project for the kids, and it is, it's also going to create a visual barrier, so they won't be able to see what's happening on 500 West in the corner of 200 South.
Yeah. Just as a final thought, and we have such a jam program today, we'll look forward to other opportunities to talk, by the way. But what is the priority, absolute priority, that is in the pipeline right now with the city? You mentioned several things, but what needs to happen right here, right now? If you could make it happen today, it'd be happening as we speak.
I think the most immediate thing that we're most proud of right now is opening our storage program. It's in the fourth week. We're actually giving people a place to put their things so they can go get jobs, and it's also cleaning up the neighborhood. So we're really happy about that. That's immediate, but our biggest priority is figuring out with this facilities commission on where and what shelter and other emergency services should look like.
Elizabeth, thank you for your time.
Thank you.
I appreciate you coming and joining us today, the Homeless Services Coordinator for Salt Lake City. We are going to talk with the Division Director of Homeless Services for the Volunteers of America, and Rob Westman is joining us right now. Rob, thank you for taking the time to be part of our program. Oops, I need to get a different microphone up there.
There we go.
Got it. First of all, tell us what your role is in this community and with the homeless.
Well, basically what we do, Volunteers of America is a nonprofit organization that works with the most vulnerable individuals in our community. And basically what we do is we seek out folks who aren't receiving services and try and get them connected. And, you know, because as we see, we've got folks out here who don't seem to be connected with much, and that's
right.
What we want to do is get them connected.
Last night, and again, I spent a lot of time in this area, as I came out of a movie screening last night at the Gateway Theaters and I walked along, there is a noticeable increase, dramatic, and also something that I have not really seen, at least to this degree before. It almost seems like little micro communities. Back in the Great Depression, they would have called them Hoovervilles.
Okay.
That are just popping up along the side of the road.
Yep.
Whether it's on the freeway on ramps, whether it's over on 4th or over on 5th and 6th, or whether it's around Pioneer Park or down on 5th West. I've never quite seen anything like it. What's happening?
Sure. Well, I'll tell you, last week we came out and we surveyed a bunch of the folks who were out on the 5th West area. And what we found is that most of them had been housed in the last couple of months and for whatever reason were unfortunately lost their housing situation and are trying to figure out how to get back on their feet. And that's what we were trying to help them with.
We actually had one of our reporters who did a little in-depth piece for KSL to set the stage for what we are doing right now.
Yeah.
And he was talking with one of these individuals who indicated that he was no longer welcome at the road home for, I think it was 60 days, and kind of musing as to why, while he lit up a crack pipe right in front of our reporter.
Yeah.
I mean, holy cow.
Yeah, I mean, we have clients who are in various states of disarray, really, and what we try and do is get them back on their feet and connected with the treatment and the other services needed so that that kind of stuff doesn't happen.
Rob, you have brought a guest with
yes.
you. Perhaps you could tell us a little bit about this young man.
Yeah, so this is Anthony. And Anthony received services at our youth drop-in center, our homeless youth resource center. And Anthony was kind enough to come down and kind of share some of his story with us.
Anthony, how did you end up here?
Started out just being homeless.
How'd that happen?
I fell into addiction, and I have nobody to blame but myself. But it took the light out in my brain, and I just slowly started to decline till I realized I was homeless and I needed help, and I didn't know who to go to for help, because I don't have anybody. And these guys here at VOA are kind enough to take me in and to, you know, help me get back on my feet with whatever it takes.
When it really dawned on you that you were homeless, what went through your mind?
Almost like shocking, like reality just hit me in the face, and super just discouraging and just shocked. I couldn't believe it. I would never have guessed that I would end up homeless.
How'd you survive?
Well, it was a struggle for about a week or so, and I got word of these guys helping.
Who told you? Youth.
A gentleman that was actually involved in their program. Yeah. Currently, he let me know, and he says go down there, and I did right that day, and I went down there and told them my story, and they're like, well, let's fill out some paperwork, and we can get you back on your feet if you do, you know, follow our program and do what it takes, then there's no doubt that, you know, I wouldn't be homeless anymore.
So. Anthony, what's your story today? What condition are you in today?
It's the beginning for me, man. It's the beginning to take the, you know, first couple of steps to just bettering myself and be that person I used to be before I fell into addiction, before I, you know, ended up homeless. So.
Where are you from originally?
Salt Lake.
Salt Lake. Yeah.
Salt Lake.
Let's go back for just a moment to Rob, and then we'll need to take a break. And Anthony, I really do appreciate you joining.
And I appreciate you too.
I know this isn't easy, and I can only imagine, you know, some of the challenges and the things you've been through. Rob,
yeah.
How uncommon is this down in this neighborhood?
You know, part of it is that there's a lot of hopelessness. I mean, obviously, yeah. I've been... we talk to clients who they've been shunned by everything that was supposed to take care of them, from family to friends to other parts of the community, just get pushed away. And at some point you just say, well, fine, that's my lot in life, yeah. If you will. But, you know, if we get folks who will come in, talk with us, and we can say, okay, it's going to be a hard process, but we need to get going, and they do.
What would you recommend for folks? How can they help, especially with your organization? And just as a final note.
You know, get involved. Contact us and find out what they can do to help. We have volunteers. We need, you know, certainly financial resources for folks is very helpful. But just really get involved. Learn and talk to folks.
Anthony, where do you think you'd be had you not run into these guys?
Oh, definitely back in jail. Definitely. I did five days about 2 weeks ago. And I told myself I would do anything that it takes to. I made it my rock bottom. I didn't have to, but when I got out after that fifth day, and I was like, this is it. I could keep going where the route I was going prior to being in jail, or I can make a stand and make this my rock bottom and find the help, because it's out there.
Yeah.
And I started asking around, and I was very fortunate enough to find these guys. Yeah.
Anthony, let me shake your hand. I wish you well.
God bless.
I really
do. Thank you, too. I appreciate you.
Thank you so much for joining us with Volunteers of America. Let's take a break. And when we come back, we are going to talk with The Road Home. We're going to talk with the Board of Trustees President, Joe Horton. I've known Joe for years and years. And we'll also talk with the Executive Director of The Road Home next on today's Doug Wright Show, live from Pioneer Park. For so many years now, Desert Star Playhouse has been the place for families to go and kick back, relax, laugh, have fun, be together, enjoy such a great, great environment, and be so thoroughly, crazily entertained. You know, right now, up on the stage, they have Greased. Happy Days Are Here Again. When I had lunch with Desert Star Playhouse just the other day, they were saying that this is one of their most successful shows yet. People are loving this loving spoof on everything that says the 1950s. It's called Greased, Happy Days are here again, and it plays at Desert Star Playhouse now through the 22nd of August. So you don't want to put this off. You want to get your tickets and make sure you see this great presentation. Give them a call at 801-266-2600, 266-2600. You can also get tickets online on the website, desertstarplayhouse.com, desertstarplayhouse.com, or call 266-2600.
Do you suffer from the pain or the embarrassment of varicose veins? Do you cover up your legs with long pants even in the heat of summer? Isn't it time to improve your quality of life to enjoy your favorite activities with less leg discomfort? If you have leg pain, aching or cramping, leg or ankle swelling, restless legs, a heavy feeling, or fatigued legs, you're invited to attend a free varicose vein screening on Thursday, August 6th at Vein Institute of Utah. Unlike other practices, they specialize in superior vein care. And most procedures may be covered by insurance, or ask about their interest-free payment plans. Call 877-FIX-VEIN for your free Vein Institute of Utah screening on Thursday, August 6th at 909 East, 9400 South in Sandy. Call 877-FIX-VEIN. That's 877-FIX-VEIN. Or visit utahveins.com.
With the three things you need to know this hour, I'm Mark Jackson. First, speed is believed to be one of the factors in a late-night, early-morning crash on I-15 claiming three lives. The crash occurred in the middle of a work zone near Point of the Mountain. Most of the victims were wearing seatbelts. Second, a growing number of homeless people are choosing to sleep outside of the road home shelter rather than inside of it. Police are dealing with an increase in crime in the Rio Grande area. Listen as our Doug Wright continues a special broadcast, Homeless in Salt Lake. That's coming up next. Third is ABC News.
President Obama pushing hard for the Iran nuclear deal at American University in Washington. He compared the deal to the more open dialogue called for by President Kennedy at the same location back in 1963.
The agreement now reached between the international community and the Islamic Republic of Iran builds on this tradition of strong, principled diplomacy.
The president says the deal doesn't resolve all problems, but it does achieve the most critical security issue, keeping Iran from manufacturing nuclear weapons. Big week for Republican candidates running for president. Tomorrow's debate, the top 10 candidates will be on stage in primetime. The others will be on stage a little earlier than that.
Your weather for today, expected up to 91 later. Some clouds, a little sunshine, possibly some rain in the mix. Low 69, right now 82 degrees in downtown Salt Lake City. Now back to the Doug Wright Show on KSL News Radio.
Live from downtown Pioneer Park, it's Homeless in Salt Lake City. A special broadcast of the Doug Wright Show on KSL News Radio.
So appreciate all of you listening in today. This is such an important issue that we're talking about, and talking about this part of Salt Lake City, talking about the park that is at the epicenter of this area we're talking about the businesses that are going on. But of course, the real issue, the thing we really need to talk about, is how we can serve, how we are serving, how we can better serve those who find themselves homeless in our community. It's a moral obligation, and there are many working parts to this, and we hope to address many of them on the program today. And it is a real joy for me. It's been a while since I've seen my friend Joe Horton, and Joe and I got to know each other up at Primary Children's Medical Center for so many years, and then of course with IHC, and now you're the board president volunteering with the Road Home. And Joe, so good to see you.
Oh, thank you, Doug. It's so good to see you. I remember many hours that we were raising money together for charity care for Primary Children's and all the great work you did there. Thank you.
Well, thank you for all the great work you and so many others have done for our community, especially at Primary and now with Road Home. And then, of course, you know, Matt, you and I have had the chance to talk before, executive director with the Road Home, Matt Menkovich with us. And let's talk a little bit. You were described the other day by the head of the community council in this area as, let's see, how did he word it? Those who are doing the work of angels. And I thought that was a beautiful way of putting it. And while he talked about some issues and some problems and some concerns, he said, I want to make it perfectly clear that those at the Road Home are doing the work of angels. How tough is that right now?
I do appreciate Christian Harrison's shout out to my teammates. They're wonderful people who have devoted their lives and their careers to helping serve so many people who are currently in the midst of terrible challenges. And we are experiencing historic demand, increases in demand. We have a number of people who are turning to us. I heard a trailer earlier say that people are sleeping outside and choosing not to come into the road home. Well, we are operating at capacity. Each bed is currently occupied and will be tonight. And I want to make sure that we get that out there. I also want to point out that there is a correlation that a person can make, any reasonable person, that the shelter is the cause of these problems. And in fact, it is not. We are helping to remedy some of these issues, but a lack of affordable housing, a lack of services to people in the midst of terrible mental health issues, a lack of services to people who need substance use disorder treatment are intersecting in our communities in a manner that drives people into the homeless shelter. But affordable housing and poverty being the two big ones.
Right. Sometimes I look at those two issues of mental illness and then drug addiction, either on top of that or beside it, and I cannot imagine the challenge. And Joe, working as a volunteer here and being the president of the Board of Trustees for Road Home, how do you see this scenario and where are we going?
You know, I think where we need to go is exactly what Matt just said. We need to, if we think about solving homelessness, we need to do something about deeply affordable housing. I mean, that really looms large in terms of solutions. And we need more support for the two key elements of mental health support and addiction recovery. I was in the shelter yesterday and got a chance to visit with the coordinator who's there from Valley Mental Health. Talked to her for a few minutes, and she is understandably almost overwhelmed with the amount of need there, and we could use much more. So I think that combination of housing, being able to deal with the addiction and with the mental health issues is what spells a solution for us in the future, and that's what we're aiming for.
Doug, if I might
sure.
add, if I might add, just as an example, we'll have approximately 800 people in our shelter tonight, 200 of whom will be adorable children, and they are. I mean, I just left the facility and we have some adorable children staying at the shelter. Children shouldn't be in shelter. I understand that. We need to create more housing opportunities. But for the 800 people we'll have in shelter tonight, for the 200 children who will be there, we've created housing opportunities. We will have 1,300 people in housing throughout the community, throughout Salt Lake County, 525 of whom are children, who are enrolled in our housing program, and of which the Road Home is a part of the rental structure, the rental payments, the partnerships with landlords, in order to help draw people out of this neighborhood and back into our communities. We're maxing out on the support that we have in that area and we're providing, but we need to grow more in that area.
Well, I look at what is spilling into the streets, and I look, and I'm not just talking from your show, I'm talking in general. I mean, you know, when you talk about overcrowding, when you talk about max, I mean, all of those of us who live and work in this area, we notice it. I mean, the streets are more populated, these little shanty towns that are popping up, that these little microcosm communities, and you drive by those, and it is so distressing, and everybody asks, what can they do? And obviously, you are working very hard on this issue. As far as the condition of the shelter, and I wanted to give you a chance to respond to this, because this has come up. It's come up in some of the conversations, even some of the people I chatted with this morning, Brandon and others. They talk about the interior condition of the shelter. What is that condition?
Doug, come on down and see. And I do want to respond to the claims that have been made by folks and the notion that we boot people out. I heard one in an earlier broadcast, I heard that term. We boot people out in the morning and don't bring them back until the afternoon. We actually close down the dormitories for 2 hours where we clean and disinfect the surface areas of all the bathrooms, each bed, the floors, and prepare it for accommodating the people who will turn around and come back in at about 10 a.m. We've got about 15 people on our operations team working diligently to make sure that we keep this place clean and sanitized. It's an old, decades-old building. There's no doubt about that. We are not in competition with the Hilton or the Marriott. We could benefit from a new facility. There's no doubt about it. We very much support the notion of having women and children at a separate facility and managing that. We embrace that possibility. But right now, we have this facility, and we do our utmost to keep it clean and disinfected.
One other comment, yes. Doug, is that we've been criticized for the queuing that you see.
Right.
And I think some people have the impression that that's because we've closed the shelter. As Matt said, we haven't, other than the 2 hours for cleaning. But we do have to check everybody back in, and one of the obstacles has been a number of belongings that have to be checked each time they come back in. We now have a storage facility on the west side that just opened last month, where we're able to have people check in and have a secure storage, which should help reduce the queuing, again, is one of the concerns that people have. So we're working on this all the time to try and improve it.
For example, Brandon earlier spoke about that terrible experience he had waiting in line because we're checking through everyone's bags, making sure folks aren't bringing drugs into the shelter and contraband. Now we're getting about 140 individuals through in a 2 hour period. It's still a wait. There's still a line, but that's our max time, right? Around 10 to noon, where people are coming in and checking in beds. We're getting about 140 through. The city in running their storage has been a remarkable benefit.
Yeah, Elizabeth mentioned that this morning from the city, which I greatly appreciated. Obviously, on this program today, we are setting the stage for what I hope can be a launching point for more discussions, productive things, ultimately solutions. And I can't thank you both enough for joining us today.
Thank you, Doug. And we want to thank the Salt Lake City Police Department, because their new approach of restoring order on Rio Grande Street is tremendously beneficial, and they're just implementing that. And I think Chief Brown will be talking more about that.
Right.
And we're already seeing results.
This has to be a community effort. We can't do our mission in isolation from others, and we're grateful for the partners that we have.
Doug, if I could say one more thing, because I think that there are people listening to this broadcast right now that think the shelter is a dangerous place and they may choose to sleep outside. I give you my personal assurance. Come down. We have 24-hour, 7-day-a-week security. Come down. You can talk to me. I'm Matt. Just check in and ask for Matt, and I'll show you around.
I so appreciate both of you joining us here at KSL News Radio.